Mary, come on up. Can't wait to hear it.
My name is Mary Lourdes, and I'm an alcoholic. My last name is Lynch. I always say it's not my real last name. That's my married name. I had to start off sarcastic. So I was trying to get it together a bit. Steve helped me. He said the third step prayer for me. Then I sat down. I read it again, and I just said, you know what? I can't get anyone sober. I can't get anyone drunk. But one thing I know is I can't stay sober by myself. So I'm grateful to be here and almost grateful to have been asked to speak. They said my sobriety date. I have a sponsor. I sponsor women. Sometimes I think they sponsor me. Oftentimes, people I've been sponsoring have said to me, oh my God, you helped me so much. And I think, I didn't say one blessed word. Not one. I was just listening. So I'm so grateful to the people that were able to listen to me. I grew up in and around AA. My father was sober when I was born. All of there's six, I'm Irish Catholic. With a name like Mary Lourdes, it's probably a clue. It was a wonderful life when my father was alive. Our godfathers were in the program, and our house was a really fun place. But I will tell you that I can remember, so no drinking in our house, but I can remember going to my aunt's house, and they had booze there. And I, at the parties, and I always wished we did. I hadn't even taken a drink yet. And I'll tell you right now, I never drank normally. Never. I drank to get drunk from the first drink to the last. That's how I drank. You know the old saying, if I was a social drinker, I would have drank all the time. I mean, I never, ever drank normally. I don't remember if there was ever a time that I would have only been able to get one drink, but if there was, I don't think I wouldn't have had it, because that just was not the way I drank. The first time someone told me I was an alcoholic was my mother. I was 17 years old, and she said, you drink like your father, which was not a compliment. The next time, I was in college, and I went to my professor to apologize for missing a midterm. And he told me I took it. And then, what really pissed him off is I got an A. And he said to me, I think you have a problem. And I said to him, and so I was probably 20, 21, I said, I'm an alcoholic. You know, and I knew it then. And that was the beginning of when I decided I was just going to drink until I died. And that was kind of, I mean, because drinking topped everything. I often say, you know, when the drinking got to 24/7, I was not around my family or anyone, and I always said I really didn't hurt anyone, but oh my God, I hurt so many people. I didn't show up for anything. Those last 5 years, I didn't show up. Weddings, wakes, it didn't matter. I wasn't there because I was drinking. It eventually came to the point that I had to work in a bar because that was the only job that really someone like me could do. And it got so bad, you know, I buried my car in so many snowbanks. I was very fortunate. I grew up in Syracuse, New York. The snow, they're going to get the snowball, I think, this year. It's one of the two or three worst snow. So, you know, I buried my car in a snowbank. I'd get out, and I always walked away from it. I never waited for anyone to pull me out or waited for the cops to show up. I never got arrested. Well, I never got arrested. I would have. My mother worked for a judge. So I knew a lot of cops, and they loved my mother. I was never arrested. I never went to jail, and I should have. I went to police stations. They just never put me in the jail. They always let me go. I don't know if they were doing me a favor or not. I don't know. I could tell a drunk log it'd be so easy, and I could entertain with my drunk log, but I'm going to just kind of say, I just never drank normally, and I had to end up working in a bar and then living there in one of the apartments attached to the bar because at that point, you know, I really couldn't drive anymore much. And I got to a point I didn't draw a sober breath. I just drank 24/7. So at that point, two of my brothers had come into AA, and they talked me into coming home for a wedding, and I did go home. And they kind of kidnapped me. And the worst thing was they told me, Sunday night you're going to an AA meeting. And I forgot about all the people who came to AA who drank again. All I remembered was all those people who came, they didn't drink. So I drank that weekend, and the last drink I had was I was drinking a water glass full of vodka, and my mother, we were sitting outside on the bank out in the backyard, and she purposely knocked it over, and I remember clear as day wanting to take that heavy water glass and just hit her over the head with it. And my mother was, honest to God, the sweetest person. She was always on the beads praying. That's all she did is try to, you know, we went from the family that prayed together, and then my dad died when I was 10. And I had four older brothers and older sister. We went from the family that prayed together to the family that partied together. And my mother wanted the boys to take care of me, and so they did. They kept me with them. They got me good drugs. I'm not going to talk much about drugs, but they made sure I always did good drugs. Mm-hmm. And they kept me with them, and they kept me safe, and they kept me away from creepy guys. And then I came in, and then they dragged me to that first meeting. And the other thing in my head, I thought AA was Catholic. I don't know why, but I did. Well, because, you know, like the prayers we had in our house that I grew up with, they were all AA prayers. I mean, they were everywhere in our house. They, you know, in the bathroom mirror was the prayer of St. Francis, and the Serenity prayer, and the third step prayer. And so I didn't know that. I just thought they were all Catholic prayers. So the meeting was called HMS, and so I don't know what I thought it was Latin, but it stood for Hit Monday Sober. It was on a Sunday night. I just knew so many people there. Well, there was my brothers. Then I had a lot of relatives. It's in my family. We're all drunk. There's a lot of drunks, and then all the old men that were my dad's friends that really took care of me. And I just want to tell you, I would have screwed every guy in AA if it wasn't for those men. I mean, they wouldn't let anyone near me. They threatened him with bodily harm, and they meant it. And I'll tell you, I came to Atlanta, and a couple times, like, I saw a guy hitting on a new woman, and I was like, hey, asshole, you know? I mean, I just had no filter with that. It was like out loud, and people said, you're very rude. And I said, I'm sorry, but, you know, if you don't shame them out loud, they'll just keep doing it. So and I'm not that I probably stopped anyone, but at least I let people know. So anyway, I went to that meeting on a Sunday night with not one intention of stopping drinking. And from that night to this night, I have not had a drink. Not because of me, but because, you know, I just kept showing up, suiting up and showing up, and I hated it. So I got, like, assigned a sponsor that night. Her name was Judy. She was a saint. So she said, you have to call me every day. And we had real telephones. I used to call her every day. I'd say, it's me, and then I'd slam that damn phone down, and, oh, it was the best part of my day. I loved it. It made me feel almost, I felt so inhuman. For so long, I just didn't feel human. Most people, or at least most people that I talk to, usually the desire to drink goes away after 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. It was a couple years that every day I promised myself I'd drink the next day. But every night I went to a meeting, every night. And of course, I was assigned meetings. Funny as it was, I was going to a dead man's meeting. You have to go to Bushell's meetings. And I'm thinking, guy was dead. I mean, he was Dennis's godfather. I said, Bushell's dead. But anyway, that was the list I got, and those were the meetings I went to. I went to a step. I went to a speaker. I went to a big book study. And then I went to discussion meetings. But I don't think that I missed a meeting for my first 5 or 6 years, you know, no matter what day it was, because otherwise I would have joined. So with good old Judy, she got me going in my first attempt at the steps. And one of the things that I remember most is we got to the fourth step and the fifth step. And at the end of the fifth step, she said to me, from this day forward, everything you do is exactly who you are. Mm-hmm. You can't blame the booze or the drugs. What you do from this day forward is you. All you. Oh, Jesus. Yeah. So, and she said, when you're doing your 10th step, because we're going to get there, you're going to remember that every action, that's exactly who you are. And you better say your prayers, because you sure need to change a lot. And people would say, oh, this is a selfish program, and all those guys would say, except for you, you're selfish enough. So one day I was complaining, because when I was 5 years sober, I got married, and my husband and I bought a house together. And that winter, there was a mistake in the building of the house, and one of the walls cracked. It shifted. And I had just finished having it repainted from, builder's paint to new paint, and that night the house shifted, and I was complaining about it in a meeting. And, oh my God, you would have liked the things they said to me that night. So I'm going to tell you that... I'm going to tell you some of the things I learned. I'm going to tell you one quick story, though. So today I called a friend of mine. I've moved in AA several times. Oh, my God. My first move was California. My first meeting, we're there. This woman's talking. I hit the guy next to me. I go, is this a speaker meeting? In Syracuse, if you talk longer than 3 minutes, they would have told you to shut up. It's the woman talked for about 20 minutes. I thought it was a speaker. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you, I never met such wonderful, kind people, and they were so good to me in California, and I stayed sober. I was in the Bay Area. That was my first move. There's more. But I was talking today to one of my friends. It's her anniversary, so I called her to say happy anniversary. And I said, you still go to the noon at Lexington? And she said to me, no, there's not really any sobriety there. And I said to her, well, God, I'm glad I didn't think that when I was living there and helping you. And she felt bad. And I felt bad. I said, I didn't mean to be so harsh, but Jesus, that's what life is about. So I'll tell you one of the reasons I know I'm sober, still sober, or that I've been able to keep a drink down day at a time. I follow the newcomer around. Mm-hmm. I'm so grateful for the newcomers who remind me all that, because, I'm flipping old. I'm 68 maybe? Mm-hmm. I can't remember if I'm going to be 68 or 69 in February, one or the other. Mm-hmm. I'm old. And it's been a few 24 hours since I had a drink, and I need to remember. And let me tell you, when I talk to a newcomer, it's like right in my face exactly who and what I was. So if I want to stay sober, I got to keep following the newcomer around and keep listening to the newcomer. And I am so grateful. Like I said, I haven't picked up a drink since my first meeting. If I didn't come to so many meetings and listen to so many newcomers and so many people coming back who said it is not getting any better out there, I have heard that so many times, and that's all based on the number of meetings that I've shown up at. I've had a minimum my whole life of 3, and I almost always made 4 since since I got married, I did cut down on my meetings when I got married because I was trying to be a good wife. Done the best I can. We're still married 34 or 5 years, whatever that is, too. I don't know. 36. When you get old, you forget everything. 36 years. Jeez. My husband says murderers get less time. Just saying. You know, I think often of a guy who went to a meeting every day. His name was Whitey. And he said to me over and over and over, "You're in a good place with good people doing a good thing." And, you know, and I still think that when I walk in the door, I don't have to know any of you. Oh, on the moves, I didn't know anyone. But I always knew I was in a good place with good people who were trying to do a good thing. I was always told that. Just that I always need an extra meeting in my back pocket. That's why I need to go to more meetings. And like the time when my mother was ill and dying, you know, I missed a lot of meetings. But I'm so grateful that I had a few in my back pocket and I was able to be... To be the kind of daughter finally I was able to be at least mostly the kind of daughter she deserved. I never left her alone, and I'm just so grateful for that. You know how I found Skyland? I'll mention that. I didn't say that. I can't believe it. Skyland is my home group. We meet at 8 p.m. on Tuesdays for a speaker meeting. At 7 p.m. on Fridays, there's a newcomer, and at 8 p.m. there's a discussion. And upstairs at 8 p.m. is an Al-Anon meeting. So I'd love it if anybody would come. It's a great meeting. And I found Skyland because one of the... And this still goes back to Judy, my first sponsor. One of the rules was your home group has to have a tradition meeting at least once a month. I was like, okay. And so I was a member of Roswell when I first moved here. And they didn't do the traditions. So I went through the book and I found Skyland. So when I first started going to Skyland, I used to just go the first Friday of the month. They did a tradition meeting. But then I found out that it was a group that really followed the traditions and was somewhere I needed to be. And I changed home groups. And I had very rarely, I don't change home groups, you know. Another thing Judy said is you don't have to like any meetings, you just have to go. Nobody ever said you had to like it. And also, hold on to your seat in your home group. And I my first home group was the West End group in Syracuse, New York. It was a special meeting. It's as old as Skyland. And it was one of the groups that my father started. So, but that wasn't why. It was just a special place. And even people would always bring a new person there because there was a welcome at the West End group that was special. There was a love for the newcomer. That's where I learned to love the newcomer and to listen. I'm so grateful to the West End for that. Work the steps. Oh, my God. If somebody said to me in my first probably 15 years, that I know how to do the steps, this is really the only way. Well, damn it, I do it that way. I mean, I did them so many times. If someone told me they had this secret sauce, whatever, I did it that way. I tried. I did it their way. I've gone through the steps I don't know how many times. Anyone who told me. But you know what I've learned is that the only way I can keep the steps in my life is to go to meetings. And often, and Don Willis always says, I'm sick of hearing people talking about working the steps. I want to start hearing about living the steps, which takes me back to Judy saying, this is exactly who you are. And oh, gosh, I thank God that I'm judged on my actions. And when you say the third separate, but my thoughts, well, I'm grateful to this day that I'm not judged on my thoughts. But God willing, you know, my thoughts will change. You know, I'll get that anger and that bad thought. I also say that sorry to say bite your, just shut up really a lot, but she'd say bite your tongue. And I mean, my tongue was sore for so long. And the number one thing I think I've learned in AA is to shut up. You know, just to take that, shut up, take that step back. Stop my first comment that I always want to come out with, especially, I can be sarcastic. And, you know, I felt bad when I said to my friend, Laura, glad I didn't think that when you were new. I felt bad after but you know what? I've always taken AA serious, and I'm never too good. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for places like NABA. In Syracuse, there was this two clubhouses I went to, especially the first 4 or 5 months when I wasn't working. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have stayed sober. So I know I owe clubhouses, and I still try to show up at a clubhouse once a week at least. I try. I don't always make it. I've always had a sponsor, and I've always had sponsees. I'm not sure who helps who more. I often am pretty sure that my sponsees have kept me sober and have given me head-to-head better things to say than I ever did. They've really, you know, really helped me try to change, try to make my actions be the right one. You know, I've come to look for simple actions. You know, at the end of the day when I do my 10th step, I just want to say, did I do one nice thing today? I don't care if it's opening the door for someone. So at least I did that. You know, if I put kind words to someone. I think that a lot of people who have a lot of time go out because they think they're not good enough or they didn't get good enough, you know? And I know I didn't get good enough. I've been sober 41 years. I'm not, you know what I mean? Think I'd be a saint. Well, how many meetings I've been to, you'd really think I'd be better than I am? But you know what? I'm as good as I can be today. And God willing, I'll be, I was kind to someone and I was helpful to someone. And, I mean, that's about the best I've got. I just, you know, and I bit my tongue probably at least twice today. Once I didn't when I said that to her, but I know I did twice. Once was to my husband. He's very grateful for that, let me tell you. And you know, I am judged on my actions. And I also have to remember, because I can be so irreverent, you know, I like to try to remember in the parking lot, you know, that there's people who look up to me because they think I have something. And so I just have to try to behave. It's very difficult. But not just in the rooms. And in the parking lot of an AA meeting, it's really, I can get crazy there. So I really do try. I'm not always successful, but I give it a shot. At least I keep trying. And I say my prayers. And I do my 10th step. My 8th and 9th step was a long list. But, you know, most of the things I couldn't really make up. You know what I mean? I didn't have a direct amend to. A lot of them had to be living amends. Some people were gone. My mother, I'm so grateful that after putting that. You know, when my father was dying, there were 6 of us. He kept saying, your mother's led a very sheltered life. You have to be good. She grew up in an Irish Catholic immigrant home. I mean, when she married my father, she didn't know what the word divorce meant. I mean, she was just so sheltered. I often think, oh, dear God, Dad, did you recognize her after what we taught her? Because we would just say, Mom, just be quiet. We're just going to smoke a joint. I mean, we were terrible. And that would be on Christmas. You know, we just didn't. We were nuts. And my brothers bought Harleys and, you know, and I could go on and on. How I paid for college. I dealt drugs. I came out of college on, like, almost nothing. But I paid for it all myself. Illegally, but at least I didn't ask my mom for any money. And my brothers gave me good drugs to sell. That was always their claim to fame. We gave you good drugs. I still say the Serenity Prayer because, and I find, I can remember when I was new, I used to say it so often. And then there went some time when it just wasn't. But it, as I've started to age in life, and there's difficulties in life that come with aging and come with aging brothers. Jesus, my brothers are, honest to God, they're old. My brother Jimmy turned 80 this year. It's just crazy. And they have not been well. And it's hard to, I don't know what the word is. It's difficult. It makes me very sad. And, you know, I think about the Serenity Prayer. So, you know, I try to call every day. I, like I said, I do the little things. I call, say, I'm thinking of you, love you. And I hang up the phone and say, oh, you're a pain in the ass. In my thoughts only. I don't say it out loud. Oh, my God. If they give me a list of things I should do. My brother's... So my dad died, and I had four fathers, and they still call me the baby and think that, oh, my goodness. I try to live, the prayer I say the most often, well, lately it really has been the Serenity Prayer, because it's just the way things have been. But the prayer of St. Francis has always meant something, because for me that's an action prayer. I want to be loved, but... I need to love. I want to be understood, but I really need to understand. I really need to get out of myself a lot, and that prayer really helps me do the next right thing. And you know, 90% of AA for me has been doing the next right thing. It really, you know, there's no... I wish I had something to tell you that would keep you sober forever. But I know if you go to a meeting, you listen to the newcomer, and just be grateful to think of a day without a drink. Someone taught me, you know, I married my husband. I met this guy, right? We go out on our first date. He orders a scotch. He doesn't even drink the damn thing. I'm thinking, Jesus, what a waste. I mean, I just have a hard time with that. And he drank like that for 15 years of our marriage. And then there was some, I didn't have any children. It was the saddest thing in our life and probably the best. But then when we were living in Connecticut, we took care of a baby for a year. Her dad had cancer of the brain. They did surgery, and he came home from Sloan Kettering with that flesh-eating bacteria, and she was only a week old, the baby. So we got the baby for a year, and he died a week before her first birthday. And then guess what? We had to give her up. She went home to her mother, and my husband started drinking. And he drank like me. I mean, he drank. That went on for about 5 or 6 years. I just went to a lot of meetings. I never talked to him about, the only thing I'd say is, I didn't have any fun last night, and sometimes I'd say, I'm leaving. You can come with me or not. I don't care. And I would get in the car. He either was with me or not. Then finally, thank you, God, one day he said to me, I need to go to an AA meeting. And I said to him, you are not going to screw around with my program. So, the next day he said to me, I need to go to an AA meeting. And I said, I'm going to tell you one thing, John. If you go to a meeting, it will screw up your drinking. You'll never drink the same again. And I walked out. Then, the third day, he said, I need to go to a meeting, and I took him. And he's been sober since then, so I'm very grateful. Yeah, yeah. I'm very, very, very grateful. This program, my whole life, you think about my family life, me, it's just a miracle what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has done in my life. I lead a really decent life. A nice life. My husband's working less. He's old too, and he shouldn't be working as much. But I said, honey, we don't want anything. We have what we need. We don't want any, I mean, we don't want anything. There's just nothing we really want. You know what I mean? My brother, when he turned 70, bought a Corvette. And I mean, I said, geez, I wish I wanted something, but I don't. I mean, you know what I mean? There's just, I'm good. I'm content. I'm so grateful. I've tried to be a good friend, a good wife, a good sister. It's always the sister that gets me, though. That's the hardest, because nobody can push your buttons like the boys can, and my sister. Oh my goodness, they're so good at it. And I'm pretty gosh darn good at pushing theirs too. I try not to. I'm trying not to do it as often. So I really, I'm just going to read you my favorite paragraph. I am, even when I'm in this, like when I can remember coming to NAVA when I first moved here from Syracuse. That was probably my toughest move, because I come to the South. I said, oh, I don't know how they stayed sober where I was, because you guys do it right. But in my mind, I'm thinking, son of a, they don't do anything right. I hated the meetings. And then when you said the Our Father, it took you 35 minutes to say the Our Father, I was like, and then chips. So in my home group, they never gave out a chip ever. They just, it's just, and in Syracuse now, they do give them out. But if they do, it's like once a month. And we don't have the weight chip thing. What we had is, if it's your first meeting, and like my first meeting, it's a first step meeting, and every person in the room talks to you. And that's the way they do it, and it's special. And I mean, I don't remember what they said to me. All I know is a lot of people looked at me, and a lot of them, I'd see them after. And then when I was kind of new, I they'd say to me, hey, we're betting on when you're going to get drunk. Okay. And then after some time, I was unrecognizable from the person, physically unrecognizable. I mean, that's how bad it was with the drinking, that people would say, if I didn't hear your voice, I would never believe it was you. Just couldn't believe how much I changed. Now he said, hey, did you lose the bet? I think I ought to get the cash. You guys are all betting on, I should have got the money. But you want to know something? I sponsored a woman down here, and there was a couple guys that would harass her because she kept going out. And they'd say, oh, I think they said they're similar, something similar. Like, they were, oh, we're betting on when you're going out again or something. And it hurt her feelings, and it made her angry. And I said, oh, my God, if it wasn't for that, I don't think I would have stayed sober. I stayed sober despite those SOBs. Can't you do it that way? I mean, just turn it around. But, oh, my God, it made her cry. It was awful. And I asked them to quit saying it to her and give the girl a break. She's having a, you know, she's having a hard time. So what else did you do wrong? The chip thing made me crazy. And you read way too much, and you say things way too slow, especially the Our Father. Yeah, anyway. But I knew, I was taught right when I was going to California that that's what you say. You guys do it right. Well, I don't know how they stay sober where I came from. I don't know how, because you do it right. And I'm thinking, And nobody told me to shut up in Atlanta. It shocked me. It did. But I think of all those who went before me, and I think of all the people who've helped me. And so many are dead. But how's this? You know, I look at the empty chairs. Let me tell you, the empty chairs always, when I come into a meeting, represent one thing. All those people that have gone out and haven't made it back in. You know, there's always someone here to tell the story of, I went out and I came back. No one comes in to tell you the story of, they didn't make it back. So when you see an empty chair, somebody belongs in that seat, and a lot of them are dead or institutionalized. I didn't talk about service work at all. I'm going to say this. I'm going to shut up in 2 minutes, I promise. So when they wanted me to go to an AA meeting, the guys they wanted to put me somewhere. And the old guy said, oh, just let her detox at home, and if it gets bad enough, call 911. Which I'm not sure that I would recommend it, but it was awful. Mm-hmm. And they said, she'll never forget it. Well, I never forgot it. It was the most awful thing. And I did that in my mother's house. My poor mother watched that. And stayed up all night with me for a few nights, trying to see if I was going to make it. That wasn't what I wanted to say. Pardon me?
Service work.
So I wanted to go to a mental institution. I thought that was much better. Because somebody said that. I said, that's a good, I'll do that. I'd rather than go to an AA meeting. Well, so after I got sober, I did start a meeting in in New York. There's two huge hospitals, Upstate Medical Center and Downstate. So I started a meeting on the mental health ward at Upstate Medical Center. And, oh my goodness, I just realized, might think some people in AA are nuts, but let me tell you, it's a whole nother, but you know what? How many of them had used alcohol to treat their mental illness, and it just made them worse. And that's the truth. So, and jails, I went to jails a lot. I went to prisons in New York. I never went to a prison down here, but I went to jails down here. And I mean, this just would baffle me. I'd like, you know, you'd go week after week after week, and you'd be like, oh, you're back, yay, so good to see you. And then you'd say to them, you know, if you came to meetings, you might stop going to jail. And they'd say, oh, but I don't go to jail every time I drink. And I'd say, but every time you go to jail, you were drinking. Mm-hmm. But it never... Well, at least, so I don't know how well I carried the message in jail, because I don't mean it worked with any of the people I talked to, because they kept coming, and I'd be so glad to see them. Oh, back in jail, yay, so good to see you. down here, I did the Roswell jail, so it was just a little cute little jail. Yeah, they were nice. I liked them. I'd be looking to see if any of my friends were coming back. Anyway, and you know what? I would tell them where I'd go to a meeting, and I promise, when you get out, I'll be there. Never one, not one. And you know, another reason I'm sober is all the people that I told I'd meet at a meeting, they never showed up. But I was there, so to all those people, I'm so grateful to them, too. I think often about the people who went before us, and I miss so many, and some, especially the people that are gone now because they've passed away. And I hear their voices in these rooms. Somebody will say something, and my mind will hear someone who said something that's gone, and I'm just so grateful to all the people that helped me. I've had great sponsorship. I've had great sponsees who've just been wonderful people in my life, some of my best friends. You know, other than one girl that I've been friends with since kindergarten, my best friend's been in this program. So I will just read that last paragraph that I love. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks for listening to me. I appreciate it.
First I slip and then I crib to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me and finally wake and there I see. I look into love's window, for a soul that's meant for me. Dixie, where the promise is, all real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, God wants us, we walk eternally. Take me.